Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, our physical therapists are back with us today, and we're talking about the limits of medical imaging when it comes to identifying the source of pains. Lori Tynebrody, one of our guests, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, good morning. Thanks for joining in.
Good morning, Larry and listeners. Great to be here on a beautiful Monday.
And Jill Tynebaum, our other guest, is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. And Jill, good to see you as well.
Hi, Larry. Hi, everybody. Hope you're having a great day.
We'll talk with them about why it's so hard to figure out pain in the areas below our waist and above our knees, including the hips, the glutes, the groin, the lower back, all kinds of places there where we could have problems. And, of course, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about medical imaging? Are you dealing with some pain maybe you can't figure out? Join in. Give a call at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Jill, let's start with you. When we say medical imaging, what does that all include?
Well, that's a great question, Larry. And typically, when someone obtains medical imaging, it's a chance to look inside and see things that aren't visible on the outside. It can be something as simple as plain films, which use x-rays. Many people call them x-rays. In healthcare, we call them plain films. It can be an MRI, which also shows things other than bone. It shows soft tissue. It could be a CT scan. There are numerous different categories that fall into the purview of medical imaging. I think what's really important to understand is that that procedure, that diagnostic assessment is just one very, very small part of what the healthcare system looks at when we're trying to arrive at a diagnosis for a patient. Lori, do you want to go on with that?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Jill. It is only one piece of information, and a good healthcare provider does not make a decision based solely on imaging. A good healthcare provider will do a good subjective history. They will get a history from the patient. If you consider all the clinical tests and the medical tests, from blood tests to imaging, that are available to people, a good provider can sift and winnow, to use that great Wisconsin phrase, all the signs and symptoms that they hear from the patient and some of the clinical exam tests that are available to us that have good psychometric properties, and then come to basically a differential diagnosis list. So at the top of my list is X, and then down I have, it could maybe be X, Y, or Z. And then if the thing that's on the top of the list is best identified with imaging, then perhaps imaging will be ordered. Typically, plain radiographs, as Jill said, are ordered first. We don't usually go to an MRI first, except in some specific situations. For example, for an adolescent with a suspected spondylolisthesis, they'll go to an MRI first because of the amount of radiation that they need to do the number of radiographs to make that diagnosis. So a good physician, a good healthcare provider will do a good, strong clinical exam first and then determine if imaging is needed.
Right. So, and the problem or the challenge with imaging is there are many what we call incidental findings. So, for example, between all of us on this call today, some of us may have low back pain, some of us may not. But if we imaged our lumbar spine, for example, if we all had an MRI, there's a very large percentage of us where our MRI would show a herniated disc, even though we're completely asymptomatic. And that is where we run into trouble. And that is why, as Lori mentioned earlier, we rely heavily on these other portions of the physical exam, the history, and everything else. So there was a study that just came out looking at hip pathology. And we already know this for the lumbar spine, but here is a study also showing that this is true with the hip. We are seeing more and more people with what we call tears of the labrum, or bony hip pathology, where you get a little bit of bony overgrowth either in the ball or the socket due to kind of overuse. And Lori can probably speak a little bit more onto that.
I can.
Unfortunately. But interestingly, this study looked at soccer players. And they looked at soccer players with groin pain and soccer players who didn't have groin pain. We know that many times the hip can refer to the groin. So they looked at people with groin pain, people without groin pain, and they imaged them. And basically what they found is the findings were very, very similar radiographically between the two groups, even though some people had groin pain and some of them did not. So the take-home message is, just because you see it either radiographically or on an MRI, it may not be the source of the patient's pain. And so we can't just look up at a plain film, a plain radiograph, or an MRI and say, oh, look, you have a labral tear, therefore you need surgery. That is not the case.
So in this study, correct me if I'm wrong, Jill, they did plain radiographs. They looked at the bony morphology, so what's called a CAM impingement or a pincer impingement. So they did not do MRIs on these people. So we don't know if they had labral tears.
Good point. Thank you.
That's So they only looked at the bony aspect of that. And for those of you who know me, my son had this, and he had surgery on both of his hips in the last year, and he did have this bony morphology. In this study of soccer players, they found that two of every three pain-free hips had this CAM morphology. 66% of the people, of the soccer players without pain, had the same CAM morphology. The piece that we don't know is, what does their labrum look like? And that's what you need an MRI for. So the I think the take-home point that Jill is making is, when you see this on a plain radiograph, when you see this on an image, doesn't necessarily mean that that is the source of the pain. And that's one of the things that we tend to jump to, is that we see it, oh, that must be causing the pain.
Right. And even if you do have a labral tear, you still can have a labral tear and be asymptomatic. That still could be, that still could not be driving your pain. With the advent of advanced imaging, particularly the MRI, now we can see so many more things. And so we're making these discoveries that how we define normal anatomy and what is truly driving a patient's pain isn't always, you don't have to have perfect anatomy to be pain-free. You can have defaults in your anatomy and still be completely asymptomatic.
You know, Marty in Rhinelander has something that relates to this. Let's go to Marty. What's on your mind, Marty?
Good morning, you guys. Hey, I have in the past had some pretty intense left shoulder pain, and there are certain areas of movement where it gets pretty painful. So throughout the years, this has been going on for probably about eight. I've gone to see various medical professionals, and the latest being a University of Chicago doctor. And I've had MRIs and X-rays done, and there was a small bone spur, and he said perhaps typical signs of minor arthritis. But as I see it, I don't think that exactly that would be the diagnosis. I think there's something more extent. And I was wondering, beyond visual imaging, and of course he did, you guys had mentioned earlier, looking into the patient's personal history. I did do quite a bit of arm wrestling. I was very, very active in sports. So, you know, there's signs that, yeah, my body could have probably taken some abuse in younger years. Currently, I'm 59 and just looking for opinions here.
Hmm. So the MRI and the x-rays didn't show a lot, showed a little bone spur. Jill, comment?
Right. Go ahead, Laurie.
Well, so the, so you start out with the plain radiographs. They showed a little spur, which is not uncommon underneath your AC joint when you have a little bit of arthritis. Follow up with an MRI to look at your rotator cuff. Is there any tendinopathy in your rotator cuff or the long head of your biceps? My guess is that was not seen since the physician didn't report that. So then the next place I go would be to the neck.
Yep.
To see if there's anything being referred to the neck, because C5 in your neck will refer directly to your shoulder. And sometimes it's very difficult to distinguish the pain that you're feeling in your shoulder, because as you move your shoulder, it changes the relationship to your neck. And you also tighten up the muscles around your neck as you move your arm, because you need to stabilize so you can move your shoulder. So I guess the next place I would go would be to look at your neck.
I completely agree with that. I would definitely look at your cervical spine, Marty. The other thing you always have to remember with imaging is you are laying, well, for the MRI, for example, you are laying down, your muscles are completely relaxed, and you're not moving your arm. So you said that you had some motions that were pretty painful. So we saw that little spur, but perhaps with your mechanics, when you're raising your arm overhead, perhaps that little spur, even though he's little, may be getting in the way depending on how you're mechanically moving your arm. So, you know, I always tell my patients that it's a static picture of you. It doesn't really show us necessarily what it looks like when you're in that position that's necessarily painful. Have you seen a physical therapist, Marty?
I was doing physical therapy rotation moves, mostly based upon what the physician said to try to, I don't know if it was for range of motion. That's not really limited, the range of motion problem. And not to off-skirt off of this, but with the C5, it wouldn't matter which shoulder it was, because ironically, this is my left shoulder. The major part of the abuse throughout my time has been to my right shoulder, which is operating just fine. So I was curious on if the C5 would impact both shoulders.
It could impact one, or it could be just one or the other.
So it depends when you're looking at your spine in general, whether it's your cervical or your lumbar, your lower, if you have what we call facet arthropathy, if you have arthritis in the little facet joints, it can cause symptoms in one arm or one leg. If you're having issues, what we call centrally, where it's putting pressure on the spinal cord itself, you'll have symptoms in both. So that's why it could be one or the other. Depends upon the location of the pathology.
So next time you're back to see the doctor,
I don't know that you even need to see the physician again. I would see a physical therapist and have them do another assessment. And as Jill said, I would start with, show me the painful position that bothers you. And you can see if that is a position that typically engages where that spur is, because we all probably know where that spur is. And then also have them check your cervical spine.
And good luck, Marty. Thanks very much for calling. Physical therapy issues today. We've started by talking about medical imaging. We can take up other topics as well with our two guests, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Laurie Tyne-Brody. Natalie Guyette, by the way, is our producer today. Christina Myshock, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today with Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Laurie Tyne-Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health spine physical therapy clinic. Questions for them, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Jeff in Appleton, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, thank you. Earlier this year, I started to get a joint pain in my fingers, knees, hips, and I went to a doctor. He did some x-rays, he did some blood work, and didn't find anything. But then he called me back, and he said he noticed that I had gone on a different statin from a heart doctor, and he said that can sometimes cause it. So he took me off of that. He said it should be improved in 6 weeks. The knees and hips seem to be better, but the fingers are getting worse. I can barely bend my fingers without severe pain in the knuckles, and I don't know what to do about it.
So what do you think, Jill? Jill? Yeah, there we go.
Jeff, how old are you?
Yes.
Can I ask?
69,
okay.
So did they, when he did blood work, do you know if he was looking for like rheumatoid arthritis or a rheumatologic factor? Do you know what he was looking for?
Yes, he was looking for that, and he was also looking for the possibility of Lyme disease.
Those
were the two things I was thinking.
Right, so I want to make sure all those bases were covered. So I have seen people who have been on a statin and who have muscle pain where it lingers. So has it been more than 6 weeks?
Yes, it's been probably at least 8 or 9 weeks.
Okay, and have you gotten back in touch with your physician?
I have, and he scheduled an appointment with a rheumatologist to take a look at it.
Okay. That seems like the next best step to make sure nothing has been missed in that category. But I have seen patients who have been on statins who develop more long-term muscle pain from being on them, even after discontinuing the statin. So this could be still some residual from that, but it'd be interesting to see if the rheumatologist has any other ideas to offer about treating this. I haven't heard if there's any other treatments from the autoimmune side of the house for treating this muscle pain that people get following statin use. I would just follow up with them. In the meantime, I'd probably try to keep my fingers as loose as possible. So warm water, squeezing a sponge, things like that, stretching your fingers. Have you tried taking an over-the-counter anti-inflammatory at all? Does that make a difference or no?
I did. No, it didn't help at all. So then he prescribed a topical ointment.
Like a Voltaren gel?
Yes, and that doesn't seem to help significantly. It does, when I wake up in the morning, they're very stiff. It does seem to help a little bit, but throughout the day, it doesn't seem to add a lot to it.
So can you reapply that throughout the day?
Yes, it's prescribed to apply it 4 or 5 times a day.
Okay, and then do you do that? Is there an improvement right after you apply it, or as you reapply it throughout the day, it becomes less effective?
It becomes less effective throughout the day.
Okay, all right.
Well, this is all really good information to take to your rheumatologist, I think, letting them know all of this information. And I think you're on the right path, Jeff, to kind of dig into this a little bit deeper, just to make sure it isn't something other than a kind of a longer term effect from the statins, as Lori mentioned. So from my perspective, I think you're on the right path of where you need to go.
There you go, Jeff.
And I think, and I also think keeping track of the things that you're doing. So one of the things that I often see when people are waiting and waiting to get in with someone is they keep doing, you know, what the last provider told them to do. Sometimes it's useful to experiment with some of the things that that you think that your next provider is going to tell you to do. So for example, trying an over-the-counter anti-inflammatory, trying a different brand of anti-inflammatory. So from an ibuprofen to an Aleve to see if that makes any difference. That way, when you go to see the rheumatologist, you can say, I've tried A, B, and C, what's next? So that they don't send you home with something you might have tried at home already. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, good advice, Jeff. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Nancy in Milwaukee will give you a chance now. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. What can we do for you?
Yes, I am 55 years old. I feel irritated on my lateral side of my knee when I'm sitting on a chair. And after I sit for an hour or so on a chair, then I get up. I feel hurt on the lateral side of my knees, and I try to walk. I feel limp. And this symptom is on and off, but it will disappear after I got up for a while. So I don't know what's going on, and I don't know what should I do to have these symptoms go away.
So, Nancy, I'm going to ask, do you sit with your legs crossed by chance when you're sitting in that chair, or are your legs kind of even with each other?
Even with each other.
Okay,
and when
all
I
right.
feel irritated, I try to lift up that leg, and it helped a little bit, but then I go down, put my leg down again, and feel okay. a little bit irritated again.
So are you pretty active, Nancy? Do you exercise?
Yeah, most of the time, yep.
You walk?
I walk, yeah.
Okay. And is when you say the pain is on the lateral side, is it way on the outside, or does it feel like it's on the outside but deep inside your knee?
I think it's, sometimes I press it. I feel it when I press it on lateral side to the back.
Okay. So I would go see a physical therapist to have this checked out. It sounds like it could be your iliotibial band, or it could be a hamstring tendon that attaches back there. There's a couple things in that area. And just try to figure out why it is that you're having this problem. So maybe your knee alignment is less than perfect, and there's some specific stretching or strengthening that you need to do. So if you're a regular walker, you want to be able to keep that up, and you don't want to have that pain when you get up out of a chair. So I would see a physical therapist and have them examine your knees and see if they could determine exactly the source of that pain and give you some exercises or things you can do at home. They may talk to you about your shoe wear. So bring your shoes in that you usually walk in so that you can bring as much information as possible.
Yep.
Good luck. Thank
sounds
you so
like much. Sounds like an overuse
yep,
issue.
Sure does. Yeah. Probably
good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call, Nancy. Jeff in Eau Claire had cortisone injections last Monday. He had made an appointment for Synvisc, but doctor said he will only do that if he doesn't get relief from two or three cortisone shots. The doctor said his x-rays don't look that painful, but Jeff says, try walking a mile in my knees.
Well, so typically we would not go to a cortisone shot first off,
right.
Because that has really fairly significant deleterious effects on your joint itself. So we kind of reserve those for the most serious cases. Not to say that you're not having a lot of pain, but there are other alternatives first. So most of the people here would go to Synvisc prior to cortisone. That would be a choice before cortisone, as well as physical therapy.
Jill? Well, I was going to say the first line of defense probably would be seeing a physical therapist for Jeff. I'm not sure if he has or not, but if he hasn't, that would definitely be something that I would suggest. And of course, getting in the pool and unloading that joint, if he has very arthritic joints, may be a really good strategy. And then, as Lori mentioned, the hyaluronic acid injections, the Synvisc injections, are a really good strategy. And Larry, would you like to give your there. Little,
you give go, your little Larry. Plug?
Yeah, it's like I had that done. I was going to have surgery and had the Synvisc instead. And about 8 years later, I'm still just fine with my knees. I have no problems.
And Larry, it took a while before the Synvisc took hold. Is that right?
Yeah, I think I had three shots, and the person told me that it was going to take a few weeks for it to kind of really kick in. And it kicked in like the week before my surgery was scheduled, and I called and canceled it.
Outstanding. Yeah. So, and I think Jeff said that is the radiograph showed that the arthritis was mild, if I remember correctly. And that's a great case for Synvisc. So sometimes if your arthritis is too severe, the Synvisc doesn't work very well. Right. So there's sort of a window in terms of getting that done. So it seems like this would be the right time, but absolutely start with physical therapy, because even if he would get an injection, you want the physical therapy to deal with the issues, whether it's strength, whether it's body mechanics or whatever, that led him to this point to begin with. You don't want to end up back in the same place.
Right.
And thanks for that email, Jeff. Appreciate it very much. Darla in Rice Lake, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Darla.
Hi. Yeah, I just was listening to all the things, and it gave me the thought. I have where I'll go along for days. I'll be working. Everything's great. I feel wonderful. And then I'll wake up in the morning, and it's like my muscles just don't want to go. And that it's just great, a huge fatigue. And then it'll, I'll sleep, and in a couple of days, then I'm back up and going. But in that time of fatigue, I could care less what happens around me.
Yeah.
So do you have difficulty getting out of bed, Darla? I mean, are you doing everything you can that you would normally do during that time frame? Or is this fatigue so severe that it's precluding you from doing your job, activities in daily living, things like that?
Yep.
It does.
It sometimes it will. Yep. And sometimes I'll just make myself go because there's no other option. But then there are times when it is so severe that I just don't care. I call in sick or, you just feel totally debilitated.
How often does this happen, Darla?
I really haven't written it down and timed it, but it's several times, probably 3, 4, 5 times a year. You know, it's not it could be, maybe it's like 6 weeks.
Yeah, or every other month or so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you can't correlate it to anything else that's happening physically, menstrual cycle, anything like that?
No.
Okay.
Just that, I'm doing a lot of things. I got a lot of things going on and stuff.
Right.
And maybe I'm pushing it, to the extent that, and that's all I can think of is that, my body's just saying, okay, you're not doing anything more. You're going to sleep.
Lots of people do that, and it sounds like that's not unusual for you. So it sounds like you're kind of a go person. So unless you're doing a great deal more, like there are some people who, because of their work schedule, they'll have like certain reports do every X number of weeks. And so for 3 days before then, it's like go, go, go. So you don't have a schedule like that where it's much more intense and then you crash.
No.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know, go ahead, Jill.
Well, I would, it's probably helpful to see if there's a little pattern to this, kind of get a good history behind it, and then see your physician. There's a couple conditions that may go with this, and it'd just be nice to kind of see if this pattern's getting more frequent, less frequent, and see if there's anything you can do to manage it. Are you thinking like chronic fatigue, Lori?
Yeah, I'm thinking like chronic fatigue, something in that category.
Me too.
So, but you know, if you go in to see your physician at a time when you're feeling great and go, 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 it's going to be, the physician's going to kind of like shrug their shoulders and not know what to do. There's no real medical test for that. It's much more based upon patient history and signs and symptoms. So I would, as Jill said, try to keep better track of things, not only your activity level, but your diet, and in, you know, anything else physically that's going on, to see if you can see a pattern. And that's going to be much more helpful for any provider trying to get at the source of this, and maybe help you understand what's going on a little bit better as well.
Yeah. Good luck. Appreciate your call.
Yeah. Let us know what you sort out.
Yeah, please do. They're here every month. Hopefully next month there may be some, you may have a positive report for us. Thanks again for calling. Someone else wanted to know about what Synvisc is for and how you would get approval for it.
Synvisc is, it's a hyaluronic acid. It's part of the basic building blocks of connective tissue. So patients like to think about it as WD-40 for their joints. So they inject it. It's most common at the knee. It's been most effective at the knee. It seems as though it has not been shown to be quite as effective at some of the other joints. It's useful in people who have mild symptomatic arthritis in combination with some physical therapy. It is not terribly effective for people who have severe arthritis, and there are different dosages. Some people do a series of three, like Larry had. Some people do a single injection. Jill, what can
right.
you add to that?
So there's different brands. So mm-hmm. Synvisc is a brand name. Mm-hmm. So hyaluronic acid injections, or HA injections, is the overarching concept. So depending on the manufacturer, depends on how many injections you would get, how they're spaced apart, things like that. So there's different ones, different physicians use. But as Lori said, most of the research supports getting it done in the cases of patients with mild OA, mild osteoarthritis, specifically at the knee joint.
And it is not the same as cortisone. So people
Correct.
Who say they're getting an injection, it is not the same as cortisone. Cortisone is a potent anti-inflammatory, and the Synvisc, the hyaluronic acid, is much kinder to your joint. It's not as hard on your joint as the cortisone is. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And it can really work wonders sometimes. At least my knee was in really bad shape. I couldn't do anything. Couldn't run, jog, do anything. And now I can pretty much do everything, even after all these years.
And the fact that you're 8 years out of your Synvisc injection or your hyaluronic acid injection, Larry, is very impressive. That's great
right.
news.
And you had a known torn meniscus, correct?
I had some, it's meniscus surgery. That was, that occurred some years before that.
Okay.
But the other thing we need to point out with Larry is Larry maintains an active lifestyle. Mm-hmm. He's smart with his joints. He exercises and all of those things. So he didn't just get this Synvisc injection and wasn't passive. He maintains a good level of activity, good balance for his knees.
Yep.
Holly in northern Wisconsin has something for us. Hi, Holly.
Good morning. I have a retired husband who is non-functional, and they shoot horses, don't they? Where do I start?
He I don't know if you want to say that on public radio, Holly.
Well, I've got horses, so. But anyway, he's got bad feet, his knees are shot, his back is bad, and any little bit of anything, and he just kind of crashes and burns. Do I start at the podiatrist first? No hoof, no horse, you start there? Or do I get him to his easy place, or he's got herniated disc? Or do I just send him to you guys?
Yeah,
I would get out a horse trough and fill it full of water and have him do some pool rehab, probably. So something as complicated as this with so much lower extremity pathology, it'd be great to have him have a very comprehensive physical therapy examination. But I'm guessing Lori's going to say one of the ideal places for your husband to exercise would be the pool.
Right. And I see this, and this is very much what I see many days, because people who have a bad back and bad knees and bad feet, it's almost impossible to find an exercise that they can do that doesn't hurt one of those things. So you might have a great exercise for your knees or your back, but your feet can't tolerate it, or something great for your feet, but your back can't tolerate it. So the pool is marvelous because it unweights all those things, your feet, your knees, and your back, and you can get a very vigorous exercise program there. We can do cardio exercise, we can do strengthening, we can do flexibility, we can help maintain body weight. And the other thing that helps with the hydrostatic pressure is it increases perfusion to your heart and helps with your venous return. So you get good circulation and good perfusion of all your organs and your joints. So it's really a marvelous exercise.
So, you know, we talk a lot about the pool, Lori, but maybe you want to talk a little bit about how eventually people are able to do a little bit of a hybrid with some land-based with it as well once patients get strong enough.
Right. So the other thing to keep in mind is when we say pool therapy, you are not lap swimming. I promise you, you are not lap swimming. But at least here, we put you in a warm water pool. It goes from 3.5 to 5 feet, and you walk, and you do stretching, and you do strengthening. And the idea is hopefully to sort of get you out of this hole that you're in and get you up to a point where you can begin to do some exercise on land. So then the question is, how much on land can you do? How much can you do in the water? American College of Sports Medicine says you should be exercising at least 5 days per week. So depending upon what your body will tolerate, we'll try to move you to some land-based exercises. Some people are able to do that. Some people end up in a pool for their exercise all the time. They join a water exercise class a couple days, and then they do independent exercise another day. Or if they can progress to some exercise on land, then they'll have a land-based program they do some days and a pool program they do other days. So we can mix and match that in a lot of different ways.
Holly, good luck with that husband of yours. Thank you so much for coming.
And if you go in the lake, you can probably take the horse along.
There you go. Thanks, Holly, for calling. Appreciate it. Jill Tine Nissenbaum, Lori Tine Brody, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the iIdeas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of aches and pains and sprains and strains with our two guests today, Jill Tine Nissenbaum and Lori Tine Brody from the University of Wisconsin. Jill's an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. Lori, a physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Questions? Well, we have quite a few callers online. There's still one line open for you at 800-642-1234, or you could email to ideas@wpr.org. Andrea in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Andrea. Thanks for calling.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So for the past, well, now it's going on maybe like 4 months, I've been having right side lower pelvic pain and right side lower back pain. And so, you know, me loving the Google, you know, I Googled the symptoms. And so I'm like, oh, let's, you know, I'm like, oh, UTI. So I go and get checked for that and found that that wasn't the issue. And then preceding the pain, I work out at the gym at least 3 days a week. And so I was doing deadlifts with 12-pound weights. And knowing me, I'm probably doing it wrong because, you know, I'm looking at the YouTube, too, you know, following a little workout. So I'm sure I probably did it wrong. And I hurt myself. And so I thought, oh, okay. So I probably did a deadlift wrong. And so the pain was, at first, like 3 months ago, it was pretty bad. I probably labeled it like a 7 or 8 sometimes. The lower back pain and the pelvic pain. And so I stopped going to the gym for 3 months. So I'm thinking, oh, it's like a muscle strain, you know, I'm going to let it rest, whatever. But 3 months later, I still have the pain. No, it's not at a 7. Now it's probably like at a 2 or 3. And it's mostly when I'm standing and I'm walking. So then I was like, I'm going to Google it again. And so I'm So I'm like, well, maybe this is like a gynecological thing. So I made an appointment with my OBGYN and he's like, well, he checked to see if it was a hernia because he said the area that I was describing, there could be a hernia. And so he felt down there and he's like, well, I don't feel any protrusion or any bulging. He's like, so we'll just do an ultrasound. So, but I'm afraid, like, what if I have to go back to the Google again? Because then we don't find anything. And is the ultrasound
No more Googling.
Yeah. Dr. No. Google. Give Dr.
No more Googling. No more Googling. Yeah. So,
okay, ladies.
So let's talk a little bit about more when you have your symptoms now. You had mentioned you have your symptoms with standing and walking.
Yes.
What else makes them worse, I guess?
Well, that's pretty much the main thing, but I can literally, I show the doctor where it actually hurts.
Like, and where is that?
I can put my hand on it and I'm like, and if I press down, I'll feel pain.
Where does it hurt? Where is it?
It's like lower. I inaccurately described it to my PCP. I said my abdomen, but then it's not. It's my pelvis. It's in my pelvic region. So then that's why I thought, well, I think there's some ovaries in there and some, you know, other stuff. Uterus. I don't know. There's all kinds of things in there. So I was like, maybe it's something like that.
So Andrea.
Yeah.
So your next stop is a physical therapist.
Okay.
So if it were me and I lived in Madison, I would come here to the spine clinic where we have people who specialize in spine and in pelvic health.
Okay.
So is this coming from your back? Is it coming from your pelvis? You know, if your pain is at a 7 or 8, was it a 7 or 8? That's pretty significant. So you can have some things that happen in your back that refer to your pelvis and groin. But typically when you push on your pelvis, it doesn't hurt there.
Right.
So Jill and I are sort of, I can tell by looking at her, we're trying to sort out if this is a primary lumbar problem or a primary pelvic problem, which is why being the middle child, I'd go to somebody who specializes in both and have them sort it out. So that's where I would go to a physical therapist who specializes in spine and in pelvic health and have
spine
them examine you and sort that out.
And if it's not a condition that is treated by a physical therapist, based on their thorough examination, they could refer you to the right person. So you had mentioned that your gynecologist tested for a hernia. I don't know if they tested for a inguinal hernia or a athletic pubalgia sports hernia. There's multiple different things that come to mind for me. So a physical therapist will be able to sort through all of that and see if, yes, indeed, this is amenable to physical therapy, or if it's not, will get you in the right path, unlike Dr. Google.
Good luck.
I think Dr. Google sent you down a couple places.
Wrong ways.
Yeah, a couple dead ends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, there you go. Thanks so much, Andrea, for calling. Good luck. Sergeant Bob called in from Waukegan. He has a condition called ankylosing spondylitis, an inflammatory arthritis affecting the spine and large joints, wondering if physical therapy would help him.
Yes, I see people with ankylosing spondylitis. So ankylosing, what tends to happen is their spine basically fuses itself. So they end up losing mobility throughout their spine. It often starts in your upper back, in your thoracic spine, and in your SI joints. So I see these people frequently in the pool. Because the unweighting is really helpful for them. So yes, physical therapy helps. So what we try to do is teach you things to do to maintain your good posture. If your spine's going to fuse, like, we want it to fuse in a really useful and healthy posture. We don't want it to fuse with you bent over. And we also work really hard to steal motion from adjacent joints. So we work really hard on hip mobility and hip strengthening and shoulders so that the other joints are healthy and can accommodate the loss of mobility at your spine. So one of the worst things that can happen is that you lose mobility at your spine because of your ankylosing spondylitis. Then you also have arthritis in your hips and you don't have mobility in your hips. So we work with you a lot to maintain the mobility there and to keep strong so that you can be as healthy and functional as possible with this condition.
Good luck. Thank you, Bob, for calling. Appreciate it. Chris in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I just wanted to call in because this is a perfect day to do this. I have some issues, and I'm having one today, where I have, like, these really sensitive spots, usually on my pectoral area. And to be honest, it feels like I have an arrow stuck through me, like through the front and to the back. Sometimes it's left, sometimes it's right, sometimes it's just like sensitive areas. But like today, it feels
bad. From the sound of it.
Yeah, it just feels like I have an arrow stuck through me front to back.
Can you correlate this with any activity or anything like, oh, I did a whole bunch of this yesterday and so my pecs would be sore? Does this have, do you have a cardiac history?
I do not.
Okay, so the answer was no, you can't correlate this with any activity?
Correct.
Okay.
No, correct. Yeah. I mean, I haven't done anything. I mean, I'm an avid disc golfer, but that's not what it is.
Okay. And how long has this been going on?
Probably 10 years.
Ooh.
Just kind of flares up every once in a while.
If you push on the spot where you feel the arrow is going through, does it, like, refer pain? Does it wrap pain around to the back? Does it feel like it goes through your body? Can you tell us more about that, Chris?
Yeah, it actually, I can feel it all the way through. Both sides feel like it's bruised or like something. I've been told that maybe it's fibromyalgia, which is sort of rare for males.
So I saw somebody with this kind of complaint, and I'm trying to remember what they eventually settled on. Have you seen a physical therapist? Have you seen anyone for this?
Well, not specifically for this, Okay. I do have some SI joint problems and some arthritis in my back. So,
okay.
Not sure.
You look like you want to say something, Jill.
Well, I was thinking of T4 syndrome or, you know, some sort of weird rib dysfunction. But now that he says he has SI problems as well, does it feel tight?
It feels like bruised, like an open wound.
Okay. So fibromyalgia doesn't tend to give you that kind of a symptom, that arrow kind of feeling in it. I tend to see it with symptoms in the upper back, but not in the pectorals. So I would see somebody, I would see a physical therapist who specializes more in thoracic spine and in breathing. So it could be related to rib cage expansion. It could be related to the intercostal muscles. It could be costochondritis kinds of things. So I would find an orthopedic specialist who specializes in thoracic spine and rib pain. There are some conditions that are specific to the ribs.
Right.
Good luck.
So I'd go there next.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling, Chris. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. They will be with us right up till 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we will be back. I'm Larry Mueller. We're talking about all things physical therapy on the show today. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for spending some time with us on the Ideas Network. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, one of our guests. The other, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Great to have them with us, and we will jump right back into our phone calls. Dean in Eau Claire will give you a chance. Hi, Dean.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Okay. Well, it's really nice to speak with you folks. You do a great job. I've been having a pain in the ball of my right foot for quite a while, since about the later part of May of this year. I'm 65 years old. I'm a very active guy. I, you know, try to walk like 2+ miles a day. I do yoga. I do strength training. And I've also had started doing a lot of jump roping and a little bit of plyometrics. And I was really careful with the jump training that I do. I, you know, 1 to 2 times a week. I'm a retired Phi-Ed teacher, so I kind of know a little bit about it. Probably clearly.
Clearly, because this is such a nice program. It's a nice, well-rounded program. I'm thinking, boy, this guy really knows what he's doing. You have all the components.
That's right. Well, thank you. But anyway, this foot pain and the ball in my right foot was not getting better. And so I finally did see a podiatrist in about mid-July, about a month ago. And we talked about some things. He did do x-rays, didn't see anything in there that was, you know, showed anything, any problem. I changed my shoes to a more cushioned shoe just before I went to see him. And that did offer some relief. But he diagnosed it as, and I'll probably say the word wrong, metatarsalgia.
Uh-huh. Metatarsalgia?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes. And so he made me some, like, custom cushioned insoles to put in my shoes and so on. And, you know, he talked about you could take ibuprofen, and I've done that. It hasn't done a whole lot. And, you know, I'm just wondering, and it's I would say the pain has decreased somewhat. And I know with this type of foot issue, that is, it can be a long-term type of healing process. is there anything else that I maybe could be doing?
Okay.
So,
Jill,
so
you want to?
Go ahead, Jill.
So I was curious, Dean, is the pain you said on the ball of your foot, is it right under like your first metatarsal by your big toe?
Yeah.
Or is it?
You know,
it
yeah,
is.
That, you know, right. I should have probably explained that too. It's, I tell you what, my great toe, my big toe has got a numbness feel to it. And the more of the pain is probably behind the third and fourth toe, to be more specific. Okay. Yeah.
It sounds like a metatarsalgia / Morton's neuroma kind of condition to me. Is that what you were thinking, Laurie?
Yeah.
So, you know, Dean, one of the things you have to think about is you're an active guy. You said you walk 2+ miles a day, which is great. Typically, when most people walk, they are what we call a heel striker. So the initial load is coming on your heel, not on the ball of your foot. And then you implemented some jump training, some jumping rope and plyometrics, which switches all that load to the ball of your foot. So even though you were doing some loading through your foot, you were, now that you're doing the jumping and the plyometrics, you're loading your foot differently. So I think that's something to take into consideration. Metatarsalgia is kind of, I refer to it as a garbage can term for anything that hurts along your metatarsal heads. But the fact that you have a little numbness and tingling, sometimes you can have something called a Morton's neuroma, which is just a little wad of nervous scar tissue, kind of a glob, that's typically between your third and fourth metatarsal. The first thing that comes to mind for me when you talk about shoes is wider toe boxes to make sure that your metatarsal arch or across those metatarsals can actually move appropriately. So if you have too narrow of shoes, that can make it problematic. You can kind of squish them together. And then the other thing is I was thinking about a metatarsal arch pad, which we can get back to. Lori, what were you thinking?
I'm just wondering why he's having symptoms in one foot and not the other, if he's jumping on both feet. So
that's a great question.
You know, and can I add in that I've really switched my training program quite a bit. I have not done any jump roping or plyos since probably mid-June. I've done a lot more biking in the meantime. And you're correct. It is just one foot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen anybody, I would go in and I would see a physical therapist because you have a few things going on, as Jill said. The first metatarsal, if you have some arthritis in that joint, it may be that you are shifting your weight away from the first metatarsal and over onto the third and fourth, and that's why they're hurting. It could certainly be the Morton's neuroma. It could also be some swelling from your first MTP joint if you do have arthritis there. So having somebody look at your mechanics to see if they can sort out why you're having symptoms in one foot and not the other, you potentially have a leg length difference. Mm-hmm. That needs to be sorted out. And then they can help direct you and guide you back to your exercise program, doing the things that you want to do. But you want to figure this out because it's your foot and you need your feet for a lot of things in life. And you don't want this to progress and hold you back from doing the things that you want to do. So I would see somebody. It may just take a couple visits to sort out what came first, the chicken or egg here.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Dean. Appreciate it. Cindy emailed, has been having pain for several months in the center of the right buttocks, especially after getting up from sitting in a chair. She has to stand for a while before walking. She's 67 years old and trying to decide if it's a sciatic pain or something else and wondering how to treat it. So it's in the right buttock. Center of the right buttock.
This gets into that proverbial no man's land that we were talking about earlier. Is it coming from your low back? Is it coming from your hip? Is it a combination thereof? I mean, the first thing that comes to mind for me is a sciatica where she's got some tightness in her piriformis that's localized to that area causing an irritation there. But it could be many, many other things. Yes, Lori?
Yes, absolutely. So, buttock pain is one of the hardest things for us to diagnose because it could be referred from your hip. It could be
a primary buttock problem. It could be a gluteal tendinopathy. It could be a gluteal muscle tear. It could be piriformis syndrome. It could be pressure on your sciatic nerve. It could be referred from your back. So one of the most frustrating things for patients is coming in and they have Dr. A tell them it's coming from your back and Dr. B tell them it's coming from their hip and Dr. C telling them it's a piriformis thing. So I would see a physical therapist who looks at all those different areas and have them examine your back, have them examine your hip and your pelvis to see if they can sort out where the source of the pain is and then get you started on the right rehabilitation program for that. Great.
There you go, Cindy. Thank you for that email. Barbara in Grand Marsh, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Barbara.
I had a knee replacement in 2017. I was in severe pain for about a year. I went to a different orthopedic doctor. He said that that doctor put in too big of an implant. I went back to that original doctor, and he said he would replace it for nothing. That's a tell sign, but I went. I'm still in pain. I'm 82 years old. I am active, but nighttime's real bad. Would the Synvisc help me?
So when did you have the revision done, Barbara?
A year after the first one, so 2018.
Okay, so you're 3 years out of your second total knee as well. Okay. So the Synvisc isn't going to make a difference because you don't, like Lori said, it's WD-40 for your tissues. And when you have your total knee replacement, the tissues that would like that WD-40 are no longer present.
Right. So your joint surfaces, your articular cartilage has been replaced, usually with some plastic and metal implant. So I see people often who have pain for a long time after their knee replacement. That's not uncommon. And given that you walked around for a year with an implant that was too large and then went through a second surgery to have that first one taken down, you really don't like to take down a total joint and redo it ever. So that's really going to be hard on your tissues. My guess is you probably have some chronic low-grade synovitis that's happening there from the synovial lining of your knee. You could also have some of that deep, achy bone pain because of having to take down that primary joint. So, in terms of things to do for that, you know, we put people in a pool so they can exercise in an unweighted environment. We work to keep their hip and their thigh muscles and their shin muscles strong so that as they move, they can unweight that joint. So sometimes for people with arthritis or even after you've had your joint replaced, it's really important to keep your muscles around there strong because you want to offload that joint. If you're moving inefficiently, then more of the load with every step, which is if you're walking, you know, about 75 to 100% of your body weight, if you're jogging or so 2 to 3 times your body weight is passing through that joint. You want your muscles to offload or absorb as much of that load as possible. So continuing with some therapy, on an intermittent basis to check in and see and progress you would make sense. But exercising in a pool, other than that, I don't know that there's a whole lot to offer you, but not Synvisc, as Jill said.
Okay, there you go. Thank you, Barbara, for calling. Kim in Paddock Lake, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Kim.
Hey, Larry, thanks for taking my call. I've been a big fan of yours for decades. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Anyways, yes, you're welcome. To get to the point, it was about 2 weeks ago, Wednesday. Got home from work, had a pain in my lower left leg, and I thought, oh, felt like a shin splint, which I hadn't had in ages. So a I didn't really rest or anything. I mean, come the weekend, went to Woodman's, Menards. So the pain, of course, continued. Had some swelling in my ankle. And then also, you know, by Sunday, I noticed I had a little bit of a bump on the left side of my leg. And there was some tenderness there. So then I finally sat, you know, started to sit down and rest the leg. It was still continuing. I went to a walk-in clinic. My primary doctor wasn't in when I called for an appointment. The nurse spent a lot of time with me on the phone, and she sent me to walk-in, which was not the best choice because they're limited as to what, you know, they can do. But now I'm still going on 2 weeks. I've been elevating, you know, my legs at night, but the pain's still been pretty consistent. The bump is still there. The swelling, it's hit and miss. It seems to have gone down a little bit, and then I find, you know, I look at it a few hours later, and the swelling's back again.
Is it red? Is there red in the area?
It's a little red. I've looked at it, looking at it again today, there seemed to be a little redness, and I feel like that comes and goes.
Yeah, but you have no mechanism of injury? You don't remember anything you did, Kim?
No, and I thought about that, too, and I was wondering, the only thing I can think of that I did excessively, I've been mopping the floor, which I normally do on my hands and knees, and I thought, okay, did I shift too much weight to that leg? But, I mean, you know, just mopping in slow motion. Yeah. No injury. I mean, I went through all the days leading up to it.
Now, I would, with that bump and a little bit of redness and the swelling in one leg, I'm worried about an infection.
Yeah.
So I would get back to my primary and have this looked at again. This isn't right.
Right.
No mechanism of injury, one leg, swelling, a bump. I'd be worried about ruling out an infection there.
Right. Don't be persistent about getting in and seeing someone.
Yeah. I wouldn't put this off.
Good luck, Kim. Thank you very much for calling. William emailed. He's wondering what you think of the book, Shoulder Impingement Syndrome. He's using the book Shoulder Pain, The Solution and Prevention by Dr. Kirsch. The author recommends using a hanging exercise to cure his problem. You hang from a pull-up bar for a 15-minute period once a day. One hangs for 10 to 30-second intervals, applying full body weight, taking rest breaks for a minute or so. You think this is helpful?
No, I think for some people, a distraction type mechanism on their joint would be helpful. I don't think doing it in the overhead position is a good strategy, nor do I think using your body weight is a good strategy. For many of the population in which Lori and I see who may have shoulder pain or impingement syndrome due to hypermobility, so patients who are hypermobile or have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, things like that, this would be a contraindication. So I think to make the generalization, and we see this with a lot of things, that there's one particular exercise or activity that you can do to prevent impingement or prevent something from happening isn't going to work. This, unfortunately, is not a one-size-fits-all.
Right. And the overhead position is the worst position for people with impingement. So, I don't see that at all.
Joe in Milwaukee, what's on your mind?
Yeah. Interesting enough, I have another impingement issue. For the last 10 plus years, I've had like a clicking sound on my hips. And I finally got an X-ray, and basically they said that there's a mild prominent lateral femoral head neck junction, which may result in impingement. The femoral head in your hip socket sticks out a bit more, which could cause the clicking. There was no acute fracture or malalignment. I guess my question is, is it going to get worse? I'm going to get arthritis. I'm going to need a hip replacement. What can you tell me about this?
Well, again, just talking about things on the top of the hour, we know that there's not necessarily a correlation between what we see on those plain films and pain. So we've identified that you have a little bit of irritation on your femoral head. So you probably have what we call a CAM lesion. And then if you have a little bit of irritation with your acetabulum or the kind of the arch over the top, you can have a little bit of pincer with it. Have you seen a physical therapist for this at all, Joe?
I have not, no. Go on, though.
So that would be one of the things that I would certainly start with, because your x-rays in and of themselves don't really tell us exactly what's going on or don't give us the whole picture. So perhaps there's some flexibility impairments or tightness in some muscles that's also leading to this. Perhaps there's some weakness or some asymmetries that are leading to this as well. So you have a little bit of a muscle imbalance. And then, of course, Lori's million-dollar question is, why do you only have it on one side? Versus two, when, you know, for most people, we normally walk around with both feet on the ground. So I think seeing a physical therapist is probably a really good place to start. I think providing your physical therapist with the information that you provided us is helpful. It's one more piece of the puzzle that your physical therapist would consider when looking at everything with you. Lori, anything else?
So, clicking isn't usually an issue that we worry about. Only
right.
If clicking, popping, snapping are clearly associated with pain. Click pain. But otherwise, everyone snaps, crackles, and pops. And it doesn't necessarily mean that there's anything bad going on. And given the location of what you have going on, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to progress to arthritis or a hip replacement. What's probably most likely to lead you to have problems is being overweight, is lack of exercise, lack of activity. So stay healthy, stay strong, eat a balanced diet, and that's going to get you much farther than worrying about a click or a small bony prominence in your hip.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Wow, we are fast out, running out of time here. I want to thank you both very much for being with us today. And let's see, when are you back again? You're back in a month. September 20th.
You
will be
great.
Perfect.
We'll be back and we'll do this all over again. Thanks so much, Lori
thank
and
you.
Jill.
See you
Bye.
Then.
Jill Tine-Nissenbaum is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. And Lori Tine-Brody is a physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Just wanted to mention, this afternoon, President Biden will be delivering remarks about the situation in Afghanistan. I hope you'll join in for live coverage from us. Starts at 2:40 on the Ideas Network. So just go to the Ideas Network, of course, where you are right now. Or you could go to WPR.org. WPR.org. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk with an economist and financial advisor about the current state of the market. And we'll hear about what to consider when it comes to your investments. Thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.